News with Matt Miller.
Good morning. In the headlines, the Coast Guard today will attempt to sink that Japanese fishing vessel washed out to sea from last year's tsunami. The cutter Anna Kappa arrived on scene last night with the drifting Ruan Maru, now about 170 miles southwest of Sitka.
They have some mounted weapons on board, so they will fire the weapons into the vessel and try to hole it sufficiently to sink it.
Lieutenant Sarah Marin is command duty officer for the Coast Guard 17th District here in Juneau.
They are scuttling it now instead of waiting because there's concern for pollution and increased hazard to navigation if it were to come closer to shore.
After being spotted in Canadian waters last month, the Ruan Maru has been drifting in a northerly direction. The ocean is about 600 fathoms or about 3,600 feet deep in that location, and Marin says any diesel fuel remaining on board would likely dissipate quickly.
Having a diesel spill out at sea where there's significant wave and wind action to dissipate it quickly is significantly less damaging to the environment than having a diesel spill if it were to drift inside into inside waters here in southeast Alaska or into any of the harbors. A confined spill there could have a more significant impact on the environment and the wildlife.
It's unclear exactly how much fuel there is remaining on board the vessel. Marin says the owner has surrendered the vessel and the Japanese government has consented to the sinking. According to the website globalsecurity.org and information from contractor Bollinger Shipyards and the Coast Guard, most variants of the 110-foot Island-class cutter are usually equipped with a 25-millimeter machine gun mounted in the bow and at least two 50-caliber machine guns. The cutter Anna Kappa is based out of Petersburg. U.S. Coast Guard Rear Admiral Thomas Ostabo and his Russian counterpart, Lieutenant General Rafael Derbeyev, yesterday signed an agreement calling for continued cooperation on law enforcement in the Arctic, Bering Sea, and Northern Pacific. Derbeyev is chief of the Northeast Border Guard of the Russian Federal Security Service. He and other Russian Coast Guardsmen have been in Juneau this week to review recent joint operations with the United States and develop a future plan. Ostabo called this week's work a great representation of the cooperation between the two Coast Guards.
At the end of the day, we all share the same ocean and the same maritime border that we wish to protect, preserve, and ensure the safety of our mariners on.
The 17th District of the Coast Guard and the Northeast Border Guard coordinate international fisheries enforcement operations and response to accidents at sea, as well as law enforcement along the U.S. and Russian maritime boundary line in the Bering Sea. Derbeyev said Russia and the U.S. not only share the sea, but the Coast Guards are organized by the same work.
Способствует развитию отношений между Соединенными Штатами Америки и Российской Федерацией.
And our work helps to expand cooperation between Russia and the USA.
Derbeyev said the U.S. has provided aircraft support for several Border Guard missions in the last several months. The two agencies also worked together on the Bangoon Perkasa pirate ship, which was seized last September for illegal fishing. The agencies are updating a joint operations manual and working on an agreement to combat illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. Ostabo says the cooperative efforts between Russians and the Americans in the North Pacific, the Bering Sea, and the Arctic are like a police officer with a radar gun.
The cooperation between the Russians and the United States to have a presence on the maritime boundary line and to have a response presence there is well known in the fishing community. So I think that's the real benefit, is not to catch people necessarily in the act, it's to prevent them from doing it in the first place by them understanding that we are there.
The two services actually meet twice a year to review their joint action plan in Alaska in the spring and in Russia in the fall, and similar meetings have taken place since 1995. The Juneau Assembly formally introduced the city's biennial budget proposal at a special meeting last night, kicking off a two-month process of hearings and department presentations before the spending plan is officially adopted. Casey Kelly has more on the story.
The budget proposal is the first submitted by new city manager Kim Kiefer, previously the deputy city manager. It covers the next two fiscal years, FY 2013 starting in July, and FY 14 starting 1 year later. In her presentation to the Assembly Finance Committee, Kiefer said the spending plan is balanced, meaning expenditures match projected revenue. For FY13, it totals roughly $319 million, about a 2% drop in spending from this year. 6 months ago, the city was facing a projected shortfall of more than $7 million over the next 2 years. Kiefer and former city manager Rod Swope identified about $4 million in cuts, but were still left with a shortfall of about $4.4 million. Last month, the assembly directed the manager's office not to use layoffs or new cuts to services to close the gap. Kiefer says city departments have already started cutting operating expenses.
A number of the directors took furlough over this year, varying from a few days to a couple weeks, including the past city manager and the current city manager. There are reductions in hours of service for the libraries, for the pools will be closing earlier during the weeks. There were reductions in advertising, in office supplies, those kinds of things.
She says the proposed budget also calls for open positions to be left vacant across a variety of city departments.
In addition to that, we had some positions that we already had kept open from the prior 2 years. So we probably are looking at more like 25 people, bodies, that are being impacted by this budget.
Kiefer says she'll ask the assembly to increase fees for city services, such as Capital Transit. She says the Parks and Recreation Department has already increased some facility rental rates.
Treadwell Arena, Centennial Hall had increases. They adjusted their revenue projections for the parking structures.
The budget plan calls for a 0.4 mil increase to the property tax mill levy during the upcoming fiscal year to 10.95 total mils. The Ocbe school bond measure approved by voters last fall will increase the levy by 0.06 mils, but the additional 0.34 mil increase will go towards city operations. Looking ahead to FY14, Kiefer said she hopes for more flexibility with the mill rate, which is approved by the assembly annually.
We believe that when we get to 14, we'll be able to be lower than that from an operational standpoint because we will continue to have savings. And we're hopeful that we really truly are on the upswing of where we've been.
The final piece of the puzzle that allowed Kiefer to balance the budget was the assembly's authorization of using $1 million in one-time money from the city's water and sewer expansion fund.
The Schweitzer Area Municipal Land Development CIP and the West Juneau-North Douglas Connection were both reduced by $500,000 each. So that's what makes up that $1 million that you authorized us to use.
Following Kiefer's presentation to the Finance Committee, the Assembly held a special meeting where the city and school district budget ordinances were introduced, along with an ordinance setting the FY13 mill levy. The Finance Committee will be taking a closer look at individual pieces of the budget during meetings throughout April and May. That starts next week with presentations on the school district budget, capital projects, and marine passenger fee recommendations. The Assembly must adopt the budget no later than June 15th. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
In market news this morning, the price of Brent crude is $122.68 a barrel this morning. West Texas Intermediate currently at $101.95 a barrel. Precious and base metals are up this morning. Silver currently up 21 cents at $31.57 an ounce in New York spot market trading, and zinc currently up at 89 cents a pound. Forecast for the capital city area calls for some decreasing clouds for Hoonah, Gustavus, and Juneau today. Possibly a little fog in some areas in Juneau. Maybe a little bit of light rain in Gustavus and Hoonah this morning. High temperature about 49 degrees. Partly cloudy skies for tonight. Low temperature about 30 to 31 degrees for all three communities. And then a possibility of some sun for tomorrow for the capital city with temperatures getting up into the high 40s, maybe even as high as 50 degrees. Currently at the Juneau Airport, 31 degrees, and Alaska Airlines says flights are running on time this morning. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Already. Thanks a lot. The state Senate yesterday passed a $9.5 billion operating budget for next year. Senate Finance Committee Co-Chairman Lyman Hoffman says the plan includes more than $6 billion in general fund spending. He also said it puts about $2 billion of state revenue in Alaska's statutory reserve account. Hoffman says savings have grown since the Senate started its bipartisan approach to governing 5.5 years ago, when the total amount in reserves was only $8.1 billion.
Today, at the end of this fiscal year, that amount will swell from the $8.1 billion in undesignated savings to $21.159 billion, a growth of close to $13 billion.
The state Senate's four-member Republican minority caucus tried to make one change to the plan, an unsuccessful amendment to increase the amount of money for Governor Sean Parnell's performance scholarship program. The budget bill now goes back to the state House. Since it's significantly different than a version that body passed earlier this session, the budget is likely headed for a conference committee. And the state Senate passed a bill giving judges the ability to consider fetal alcohol spectrum disorders as a mitigating factor in sentencing for nonviolent crimes. FASD is a term used for the range of conditions experienced by children whose mothers drank alcohol while pregnant. Anchorage Republican Kevin Meyer sponsored Senate Bill 151. He says the one common feature shared by people with FASD is some form of cognitive brain damage.
More jail time for a nonviolent offender does not help these particular folks, but extended periods of parole, intensive care management, assisted living, there's a whole host of other mental health programs that will work better for folks who suffer from this disability.
Meyer's bill would require defendants to get a clinical diagnosis before FASD can be considered as a mitigating factor. Eagle River Republican Fred Dyson noted that in 20 years, the state has gone from identifying FASD as a problem to developing programs designed to treat and eradicate it.
And now what we're doing here is completing the kind of last step of dealing with these folks, and that is when they encounter the criminal justice system, for it to be identified that there is an issue going on here, that the person who suffers for it didn't cause, and it's a lifelong disability, and it gives a chance to deal with that in these circumstances.
Senate Bill 151 now heads on over to the House, where a companion legislation has already moved through the Health and Social Services Committee. At a two-day crime summit in January, lawmakers heard from experts about the need for more flexibility in sentencing for all offenders, not just people with FASD. Alaska Supreme Court Chief Justice Walter Carpenetti echoed that call in his annual address to a joint session of the House and Senate. Testimony slowed yesterday during a trial of a Juneau man charged with assault in connection with a shooting in the valley. Attorneys argued outside of earshot of the jury whether a witness's opinion about the character and reputation of both the shooter and the victim could be brought up. The shooting incident happened at Kenneth Nayland's home on Glacier Wood Drive December 20th. John Duran was injured when the bullet passed through his face. Nadine Paradovich was in the Nayland home and made the 911 call seconds after the gun was fired. Defense attorney Eric Hedlund asked her on cross-examination about what she thought about Duran.
Based upon the information that you have that you have as a result of your interactions and knowing him, do you have an opinion about whether he is a peaceful or violent person?
Yes.
And what is that opinion?
He's violent, definitely a violent person. He's an aggressor, that's for sure.
Paradovich was actually the prosecution's witness, but successful arguments by Hedlund to get her to voice her opinion on the stand eventually prompted District Attorney Dave Brower to try impeaching his own witness. He wanted to bring up Paradovich's earlier conviction for giving false information to an officer. Superior Court Judge Luis Menendez did not allow that. Hedlund played the entire tape of the nearly 7-minute 911 call that started moments after the shot was fired and continued until the first police officers arrived. A calm, cool, and collected dispatcher provides first aid advice while asking Paradovich about the location of the injured and the gun, but it's this very small portion of the call that Hedlund thinks is important.
Yeah, it was a kind of a self-defense type of thing, it sounds like.
It sounds like what?
A self-defense type of thing, I think.
Self-defense?
It seemed like.
Okay, are there more weapons involved?
No, I don't believe so. No, they're all friends. It wasn't a hostile type of thing. They're just drinking and...
Earlier on Wednesday, a veteran police officer said it's possible that some of the evidence may have been lost during officers' initial response to the scene. Sergeant Paul Hatch, an officer with 20 years' experience who was assigned last year to head up the Juneau Police Department's investigations unit, admitted that clearing a residence or making sure that it is secure usually entails checking all the rooms, not just one room. Patrolmen who were first on the scene at Nayland's house following the shooting apparently only checked the master bedroom where the single shot was fired. Hatch was called to the scene roughly 40 minutes after the 911 call. Under prolonged questioning by Nayland's defense attorney, Eric Hedlund, Hatch also said that it's possible that a rookie patrolman's actions to take a revolver from the bedroom, unload it, and then stick it in his waistband could have destroyed any evidence on the gun. That could have included fingerprints or blowback debris when the weapon was fired. Hedlund also questioned why residue or injuries on Nayland's hands were not sampled or properly documented, and who tracked blood in the house with their footprints. Was it Nayland, Duran, or witness John Day, Paratovich's boyfriend who was also in the bedroom, or was it the officer who secured the gun? Hedlund's questioning of Hatch essentially culminated with this exchange.
Is it fair to say that when you all first went in there that this wasn't really a crime scene per se? This is a self-defense case?
I don't think that's fair.
Okay, so it was a crime scene?
Yes.
All right, so, I mean, the integrity of this scene is as important as any other case, right?
Once the logistics of tending to the immediate people were taken care of, people were moved out, then yes, it was locked down and secured.
Duran is expected to testify for the prosecution. Still unclear is who actually had control of the revolver and who fired it. Nayland's trial is expected to last at least through tomorrow in Juneau Superior Court. A 6-man, 8-woman jury is currently hearing the case. Weather forecast for the Capital City area calls for some clouds, decreasing clouds for today. A little bit of fog for the Capital City area this morning. Maybe a little bit of light rain for Gustavus and Hoonah this morning. And high temperature about 49 to 50 degrees. Partly cloudy skies for tonight. Low temperature about 30 to 31 degrees. And maybe some sun for tomorrow for the Capital City with some light winds, high about 50 degrees, and then some clouds for most of this weekend in the extended forecast. Currently in the Capital City area at the airport, 31 degrees, and downtown Juneau, 35 degrees. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour. Good morning. In the headlines, the Coast Guard today will attempt to sink that Japanese fishing vessel washed out to sea from last year's tsunami. The cutter Anacapa arrived on scene last night with the drifting Ruan Maru, now about 170 miles southwest of Sitka.
They have some mounted weapons on board, so they will fire the weapons into the vessel and try to hole it sufficiently to sink it.
Lieutenant Sarah Marin is command duty officer for the Coast Guard 17th District here in Juneau.
They are scuttling it now instead of waiting because there's concern for pollution and increased hazard to navigation if it were to come closer to shore.
After being spotted in Canadian waters last month, the Ruan Maru has been drifting in a northerly direction. The ocean is about 3,600 feet deep in that location, and Marin says any diesel fuel remaining on board would likely dissipate quickly. It's unclear exactly how much fuel there is on board. Marin says the owner has surrendered the vessel, and the Japanese government has consented to the sinking.
The U.S. Coast Guard communicated extensively with the Canadian Coast Guard when this was in the border waters, and once it was firmly established in our EEZ, the U.S. Coast Guard coordinated with the Japanese government before making the decision to sink the vessel.
According to the website globalsecurity.org and information from contractor Bollinger Shipyards and the Coast Guard, most variants of the 110-foot Island-class cutter are usually equipped with a 25-millimeter machine gun mounted in the bow and at least two 50-caliber machine guns. The cutter Anacapa is based out of Petersburg, and if you want to see a picture of the Ruan Maru, you can go to our website at ktoonews.org. U.S. Coast Guard Rear Admiral Thomas Ostabo and his Russian counterpart, Lieutenant General Rafael Derbeyev, yesterday signed an agreement calling for continued cooperation on law enforcement in the Arctic, Bering Sea, and North Pacific. Derbeyev is chief of the Northeast Border Guard of the Russian Federal Security Service. He and other Russian Coast Guardsmen, or their equivalent, have been in Juneau this week to review recent joint operations with the United States and develop a future plan. Ostabo called this week's work a great representation of the cooperation between the two Coast Guards.
At the end of the day, we all share the same ocean and the same maritime border that we wish to protect, preserve, and ensure the safety of our mariners on.
The Coast Guard in the 17th District here in Alaska and the Northeast Border Guard coordinate international fisheries enforcement operations and responses to accidents at sea, as well as law enforcement along the U.S. and Russian maritime boundary line in the Bering Sea. Derbeyev said Russia and the U.S. not only share the sea, but both services are organized by the same work.
Способствует развитию отношений между Соединенными Штатами Америки и Российской Федерацией.
And our work helps to expand cooperation between Russia and the USA.
Derbeyev said the United States has provided aircraft support for several Border Guard missions in the last 6 months. The two services also worked together on the Bangun Perkasa pirate ship, which was seized last September for illegal fishing. The services are updating a joint operations manual and working on an agreement to combat illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. Ostabo says the cooperative efforts between the Russians and the United States in the North Pacific and the Bering Sea and the Arctic are like a police officer with a radar gun.
The cooperation between the Russians and the United States to have a presence on the maritime boundary line and to have a response presence there is well known in the fishing community. So I think that's the real benefit, is not to catch people necessarily in the act, it's to prevent them from doing it in the first place by them understanding that we are there.
The U.S. Coast Guard and the Russian Border Guard meet twice a year to review their joint action plan in Alaska in the spring and in Russia in the fall, and similar meetings have taken place since 1995. The Alaska Volcano Observatory says a small explosion at Cleveland Volcano in the Aleutians may have sent up a small ash cloud. The observatory says the explosion at 1:12 yesterday afternoon was of short duration and similar to small events in December. Those explosions created ash clouds that dissipated quickly and did not affect air traffic. Cleveland Volcano is a 5,675-foot peak on an uninhabited island about 940 miles southwest of Anchorage. Scientists detected the explosion on distant infrasound seismic networks. Infrasound refers to frequencies below what can be heard by the human ear. And for the first time in Alaska history, there's a recommendation to remove a judge from the bench permanently. Angela Denning Barnes has more on the story from Bethel.
When the Alaska Commission on Judicial Conduct considered the latest allegations against Bethel District Court Judge Dennis Cummings, they could have responded in several ways. If he was found guilty, disciplinary actions ranged from a public reprimand to suspension to removal. The commission's hearing lasted one day, March 16th. The decision was unanimous, and they chose the most severe punishment.
This commission recommendation is for the most significant of those sanctions, which is removal from office.
Marla Greenstein is the commission's executive director.
This is the first removal recommendation in our state.
The commission found that Cummings told a prosecutor twice off record to look at an opinion that would help his case. Speaking with one side of a trial off record is considered ex parte communications and is against Alaska's judicial code. It wasn't the first time Cummings was found guilty of it. In 2009, he was found to have passed notes in court to the prosecution. For that, the Alaska Supreme Court suspended him from the bench for 3 months without pay, which had been the commission's recommendation. The outcome of this latest recommendation is still unknown. Cummings is set to retire this month. The recommendation was sent to the Supreme Court Tuesday, which has allowed it to become public. It's not known how long the court will take to make a final decision, but Greenstein says it shouldn't be long.
The court typically considers these types of filings on a fairly expedited basis.
The timing ultimately will hinder on whether the court wants to redo the hearing process or go with the information the commission has gathered, which is the usual case. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning-Barnes.
Kind of a conservative weather forecast for most of the capital city area for today. Some patchy fog this morning for Juneau. A little bit of light rain for Gustavus and Hoonah. Otherwise, some decreasing clouds for most of the day today. Partly cloudy skies for tonight. Temperatures between 30 and 50 degrees for all three communities for today and tonight. Possibility of some sun for Juneau for tomorrow and some cloudy skies for Gustavus and Hoonah tomorrow. And then looking ahead to this weekend, temperatures between 33 and 52 degrees. Currently 31 degrees at the Juneau Airport. I'm Matt Miller, and that's a look at news and weather for this half hour.